weeknights from 6
on 2FM.
Big thanks to Beda De Silva for taking us through the afternoon here on 2FM. It's Monday the 26th of August and you're listening to Game On. We're coming up between now and the new music show at 7 o'clock. We'll hear from Colm Keyes on Colm O'Rourke's departure as news manager.
Soccer, Stephen Kelly and Alan Cawley will discuss the late Sven-Göran Eriksson. They'll review the weekend's Premier League action. Plus, we'll have more twists and turns in the League of Ireland title race.
We'll also check in with the Irish NFL show as the Irish hopefuls await their roster fate for the season ahead. All of that, plus our weekend sporting highlights. If you want to have your say, you can text us on 51552, WhatsApp us on 087 187 9200, and we're on X. We're at Game On 2FM.
Game On 2FM.
Welcome along. The gang is back together.
The gang is back together, Marie, the dream team.
After a very busy summer.
It was that. We were all covering for you, Marie, by the looks of it.
Someone has to do the work, you know.
You headed off to TV land, so we had to do all the radio.
That's what I told you. I was actually just on holidays, you know.
We were holding the show together, Marie.
I heard you were good as well. I didn't think you'd let me back in at all.
Ah, no, we couldn't wait to have you back.
Yeah. Sporting highlights, lads.
Do you want me to kick it off?
You go, Al.
Ruby actually might like my one. I actually have two this week, and the first one is, footballers get a lot of stick, as we know. Mm-hmm. But I'm not sure if you've seen the clip with Thomas Souček scoring the goal at the weekend for West Ham against Crystal Palace. Nothing spectacular in that. Decent player, chips in with his fair share of goals. But it was the celebration, Marie. He ran over to the West Ham fans, and Selhurst Park is quite tight. But, and it happened a couple of times over the weekend. It happened in the Sheffield Wednesday Leeds match as well. All the fans ran forward, as they tend to do, as he approached him. But there was a little ball boy, and he almost kind of, the barrier kind of, or the advertising hoardings, came down on his back, and Souček leapt to his defence straight away and looked after the young fella and pulled him out.
Rescued him.
And I thought it was a lovely moment. Like, there he was celebrating a goal, which is the greatest feeling in the world. And yet he saw the young fella in a bit of bother and a bit of trouble. And it could have turned out a little bit nasty. It didn't. But he pulled him out and it was lovely. And all the players were around him. The young fella was a little bit upset, obviously, probably a bit shook. But I just thought it was a nice moment over the weekend from Souček. Because, as I say, he seems like a decent fella, a good, honest player. And he's been a good signing for West Ham. The second one, Ruby might like this. Billy Lee is a jockey I've admired for a long time. And the big handicap on Saturday, riding Magical Zoe for Henry de Bromhead in York. And Billy, brilliant ride, big race, big win for Henry de Bromhead as well. And as I said, I followed Billy over the last 2, 3, 4 years. He's had really good seasons. Probably goes under the radar a little bit from some of the jockeys, but it was a big achievement and a big win for him.
Yeah, a huge win from his right. He's living on the clippings of tin, as they'd say as well. Big fella Billy, so he struggles hard with his weight, so works hard on it.
What was that phrase used?
The clippings of tin.
Just, we've discussed this before, Ruby, but like, to put into context, lads that are taller, or like, is every day a struggle?
Yeah, it becomes a routine. It becomes a lifestyle habit. So like, Billy is probably living on 1 meal a day.
Oh my God.
I know.
No, there's no way he's eating twice. So he's eating once a day. Like, all right, might have something small in the morning time, but he's eating on one, whatever it is, a day. No doubt. The size of him. Big man trying to do 9 stone. I think he does 9 stone, 9'2". Maybe he does a little bit under that at times, but yeah, he works hard at it, and he's cool as a cucumber as well, into the bargain.
What did you do? How many meals?
Oh, I was a jump jockey. I could eat twice a day.
Whoa, you were really branching out with twice a day, Ruth.
I'm telling you, I keep telling Marie though, Alan, eating is only a habit.
That's just the kind of advice I get off Ruby Walsh, you know. Everyone else gets sporting advice, and that's what I get.
Yeah.
What height is Billy?
What was I? 5'9". Billy is probably best part of 5'8". He's a big fella for a flat jockey.
Yeah.
There's taller flat jockeys again, like, but Billy also is broad for a flat jockey. Like, you get really tall guys who are like a pencil post. Billy's not like a pencil post. He has shoulders, hips, there's a bit to him, so there is. And bones weigh, unfortunately, and bones won't sweat, so you can't lose weight off them.
Yeah. On that, Ruby, did you enjoy York last week? I was tuned in.
I did enjoy York, Aaron. I thought City of Troy, I really enjoyed City of Troy in the Judmont. I wasn't sold on him up until now, at 1.25 anyway. I thought he won the derby through stamina, but I thought Ryan Moore was very good on him. But I thought the horse was spectacular, and horse racing, like every sport, it needs the athletes to do brilliant things. I mean, like, we had the Olympics, so we're watching the Diamond League at the weekend. You're watching Jakob Ingebrigtsen and you're watching Armand Duplantis in the high jump. But that's because they're fresh in your memory, so you're watching them doing incredible things, breaking world records. Every sport needs athletes that perform at a high level to keep people entertained. So I thought Sidi Troy did that in the Judmont at York. He thought he was very good, and I only wish he was going to Leopardstown for the Champions stakes. Unfortunately, it looks like he's going to go to America.
On the greatness as well, and the athletes and the superstars, I asked Jane here on Friday Night Ruby, Ryan Moore, like, where are we putting him in terms of the greats at the moment? Like, say, Lester Piggott, Frankie Dettori, is he kind of heading towards that realm now?
Oh, definitely. And he's doing it worldwide, Alan, as well. I mean, probably goes a little bit unnoticed, but Ryan... You know, William Buick is doing a good bit at the moment too, because Godolphin are running a lot of horses in America. But like, Ryan is riding between Ireland and England every week, France the weekends, America, he'd be in Hong Kong for a stint, he goes to Japan, he'd be in Australia. Like, he's just doing it all around the world, and everywhere he goes he's in demand. He's not just... A lot of times you go to the southern hemisphere or the far east and they want the local jockeys. In America they'd always say, the local guys have an advantage. Like, the locals want Ryan Moore when he goes to those places. Wow. So like, globally he's just... Like, what he's achieved is incredible, but it's global. And it definitely was my biggest envy, as being a jump jockey to a flat jockey. Flat racing is global. Jump racing is parochial compared to it.
And could you have ever been a flat jockey?
No, I was too big. Too heavy, Marie.
Because some of them do it now, don't they? Rachel rides a bit in the flats, doesn't she?
Yeah, Rachel can do 9 stone or 9 2 or 3.
What have you cut the meals from 2 to 1?
As I said, Marie, you can't make bones sweat, I'm afraid. I'd always like Rachel that she's an overweight flat jockey riding over jumps. Yeah, it's just to do with size. And unfortunately, I couldn't. I mean, the lightest I ever did was 9 stone 10. I mean, you couldn't. That's 10 pounds too heavy for the flat.
I know he gets a bit of stick as well sometimes, Ryan Moore, but I love his demeanour, Ruby. There's a mystique about him that he gives you a little bit and he won't give you any more. And he seems like there's a lot of talk goes into his answers. It's not just him being kind of selective towards who he speaks and stuff.
No, he's not. And he is cold. He was on with us during lockdown, Marie. He was locked up in a hotel in Dublin. I think he'd come back from Dubai or somewhere. But he is. I mean, to talk to him one-on-one, he's a much different person to the fella you get when the camera turns on. But he's not a showman. He just... Like, there's footballers the very same way. There's rugby players, jockeys. I mean, you look at Frankie on the flat, and like, I mean, you put the camera in front of Frankie and you couldn't stop him talking.
Frankie's on the horse in one leg.
Is Frankie the Ronaldo of horse racing, whereas Ryan Moore is more Paul Scholes, just goes in, does his job, goes home.
Does his job, goes home. No.
But does that mean then he doesn't get the, the attention then, because...
He's getting doing it. What he's doing and winning.
He's not doing it for attention either, though. He's doing it for the personal satisfaction.
In terms of fans and people talking about him, because he's just going around doing his business and going away. So, like, there's not, until Alan starts talking, like, if Alan starts talking about it, there's not as many conversations about his level of greatness, because he's just not attracting.
Yeah, and he doesn't say anything. But then again, he's probably never gotten himself in trouble for talking either. And,
he did a nice piece with Lydia Hislop I watched last week. It was a little bit longer than you usually get. It was about 2.5-3 minutes with him.
That's because they put the winners' enclosures at the bottom of the ring in York. So Lydia nabbed them at the door. Nabbed them at the door to wear him and got him the whole way down the parade ring. But he is, and he's riding for the best yard, but he's winning. It's funny, I was in Johnny Murta's this morning doing something, and even Johnny was talking about him, and he just said he's winning. It's grand. There's loads of people that win on the horses that should win. But Ryan is winning on horses that shouldn't win as well. And that's the difference.
On that as well, Ruby, right? And there's a pressure in that alone. And you, if there was anyone more better placed to answer this in terms of what you were doing and what you were having to ride with Willie Mullins as well and the horses and the favourites, there's an added pressure, I think, on that as well, because he's expected to win.
Yeah, but... I suppose, Alan, when you're professional enough about it, to me, the shorter the price, the easier it was to ride.
Okay.
Because the more everybody thought it was going to win. So it was going to be an easier horse to ride. Like, the hard ones to ride are the ones that are probably even money that should be 5-2.
Okay.
they're the hard ones to ride, because people are expecting horses to win that probably aren't going to win.
And they're on even money because it's a Willie Mullins horse.
Yeah, exactly. Things like that. So you do come across that at times, but you have to be realistic about it. It's no one going out yourself. Can this win? Should this win? Will this win? You'd have a fair idea going out. Mm. So you would.
Okay, Ruby, sporting highlight for you?
Sporting highlight for me, well, of last week it was definitely City of Troy, but I did enjoy the athletics at the weekend, Marie. Ingebrigtsen, Duplantis breaking his own world record. I mean, for a third time this year, the 10th time in all in the pole vault. Never thought I'd be talking about pole vaulting, but I think it's incredible. And Ingebrigtsen, obviously, we had Rashida as well finishing the same place as she was at the Olympics. But look, she's only going to get better and better. So, yeah, that was my sporting highlight. Although, I must say, I wasn't back, or maybe I couldn't have gone, but the NFL looks some crack in Dublin. Not the NFL, the American football, the college football. That looks some event.
Yeah, they pretty much shut up shop all around Dublin to let the college football have its day, and it was just amazing. And it also, I think, highlighted what can be done. So it highlighted, I think, for big events in Dublin, the party and the event that you can make the city, and it just seemed to go off without a hitch. And then the atmosphere in and around the stadium was just class.
Were you there, no?
No, I was around the city at the time, though.
I'll sit here and talk about any sport and have a fair idea, I would think, of what I'm talking about. Not a clue about American football or NFL. And everybody tells me it's brilliant. I've just never got
I went to a college game when I was in America, and I went to an NFL one as well in Chicago. And the college game was actually better. It was about an hour outside. And just the tailgating, the crack, the barbecues in the car, the atmosphere, just non-stop. For the whole lot of it, they're just class.
But do the two sets of fans all get on?
Yeah, everyone gets on fine. Like, there's nobody having a row in there.
That's only your game, Alan. That's only soccer fans. Every other sport they seem to get on fine.
That's what I mentioned the GA then, Ruby.
Yeah, they hate each other on the pitch.
Yeah, but it's funny. I came in from York on Saturday night into Dublin Airport, and I had noticed it last year, and I was looking again this year. Like, the amount of private jets in Dublin Airport for the college football was off the charts. They were just parked all over the airport.
Well, I don't think we have an understanding, though, of just how big college football is.
No,
that
I don't think
it's massive.
Yeah, it's absolutely huge. It's one of the biggest sports. Lorelei, our BCO, is a big expert. It's definitely one of the biggest sports over there.
Do you ever watch the NFL, Ruby?
I do, some Sunday nights. Okay, I must admit, though, last night I was watching the golf. I actually watched the end of the Women's Open in St Andrews and then waited for the FedEx to come on behind it. And I must say, I thought they were both great finishes to two great competitions.
Gillian must be in the same boat as my other half. Maybe we'll swap places, Ruby, and the two women can walk and we'll go watch the sport, because I do get killed.
Yeah, well, I'm forever
Gillian's
quoting.
Into sport as well, so.
She is, yeah, but I just quote our producer Ronan Lawler, who told me when I started this gig that I had to watch everything, so I just blame him.
Come on, well, I'm going to do the same. Blame Ronan.
Sunday evenings are great, though, because there's nothing else to do. So the fact that the NFL comes on a Sunday evening, or the golf, and you're just sitting around waiting for Monday to come, so it's actually the perfect time.
Used to be Glenn Rowe. Look at us now.
Yeah, we're going absolutely global. Speaking of global stars, my sporting highlight was Paula Donovan again coming up trumps with the single sculls final, winning it at the World Rowing Championships. And I just thought it was remarkable.
Amazing.
Like, to go from an Olympics, apparently he worked for a few days in between as a doctor in a hospital, and then just continues on about his business and goes and wins a World Rowing Championships. It's phenomenal. And it's a bit like the Ryan Moore discussion.
Under the radar stuff.
You're just expecting it. You're expecting greatness all the time because he delivers so often, and then the achievement isn't valued because you just get so used to it. And it's like, heading into this final, I was like, oh, he's just going to win.
He's the very same as Ryan Moore. He doesn't want to talk about it or about... He's definitely not going to talk about how great he is. He definitely doesn't have that ego. I mean, and even like you watch him from the Olympics, getting a lift home in a car, going back to work. Like, he just... But you get the feeling he rose and wins world championships because he just loves doing it. Yeah. He's not doing it for any other reason other than that he enjoys it.
He just said he might as well keep going.
It's phenomenal, it really is. You're right, Marie. And considering he's working in between and then going training, I presume, in the evening or the morning, whatever his schedule is, It's unbelievable, it really is.
Mind you, if you think about it, different things in life. You're a doctor and all he has to do as the professional and everything that's going through his head, things you're dealing with, I'd say Rowan could be a good release.
Yeah.
Maybe they work hand in hand. If you think of the mental pressure a doctor
could be under.
Yeah, Ruby,
I think absolutely, like, going for a row after work would be amazing, but like training to be a world champion or an Olympic champion is a little bit different than just having a release.
No, I get what Ruby's saying, yeah, because like the responsibility of being a doctor.
But Ruby, like, rowing is torture. Like, sometimes I'm getting out of the boat and I can't walk.
Yeah, but sure, I'd say he just seems to absolutely love it. Do you ever see him getting out of the boat looking like he can't walk?
Maybe not him, but other people. I have seen them getting out of the boat and not being able to walk.
Because they're not as good as Paul or none of them.
Yeah, or he must have just the most amazing lung capacity.
Yeah.
To be able to do what he does. And as you said, be able to conduct an interview afterwards and not be crawling out of the boat.
But you speak about athletes and you realise how hard rowing is. Like, there is every argument to say he is the greatest Irish athlete ever.
I'm glad you brought this up. Let's have
a
row.
At some stage, we're going to have to take a
row.
Break.
Yes.
Go on, Alan.
No, yeah. I'm not having that. I'm not. I've seen that mentioned a few times by people. I'm not having that. And I love him, and that's not to take...
Because it's not your sport. No, you're not willing enough to widen your mind enough.
No, just in terms of, like, you know who I'm going to say, and at the level that he reached, Roy Keane, playing for the biggest club in the world, winning the biggest trophies in the most participated sport in the world, global, everywhere, with the best players, the best manager, everything.
Could you imagine Roy Keane if he landed back in Dublin Airport and had to get the coach link to Cork?
But that has nothing got to do with being great.
Well, at least one fella just kept doing it.
But in fairness to Roy Keane, I think he's quite humble.
He's very humble.
Yeah. I throw
Sonia
Sullivan up there as well, because again, you talk about the participation and the achievement and how difficult it is to reach the elite phase of a sport like athletics. And look, maybe in 15 years time it'll be Rashida. She's going to be on the programme tomorrow, by the way, so everyone tune in for that. But for sports like that, I think that so many people do it, I do put a lot of value on that.
Yeah, like Roy Keane, like, it's phenomenal, like, and the longevity and what he was doing at Man United, the captain, the best player, everything.
And we can't get anybody to match him as well. Like, you know, when you look at how long ago it was when he was all those things that you've described, Alan, and how difficult it has been for anyone else to come next or near the heights that he did.
Yeah.
I'd say O'Driscoll is probably up there. You're more rugby than me, Ruby.
Is rugby global? Is rugby global though, Alan?
I wouldn't have him up there, but I'd have Pádraig Harrington up there.
Yeah, you could argue that. Yeah, Pádraig. Yeah. But like, could you say Pádraig is the greatest in his field in the world?
No.
Could you say globally you're going to argue Roy Keane was in a position on a team? Like, rowing is global. Paul O'Donovan in his division is the best in the world. You keep going. I don't know how you define it. There's different ways to define that.
I know rowing is
Ruby
global, but
up there.
Yeah, Ruby, throw Ruby in there. Yeah,
in horse racing, in national hunt racing, which is even smaller again.
Yeah, but I'd have him as the best.
I'd definitely be on the football, leaning on the football side of things, because of the amount of people who play it and how difficult it is to even get from an under 12 to an under 14 team, let alone get over to Manchester.
Yeah, and then you'd
United.
Be bringing Johnny Giles and Liam Brady and all into the argument. They're the three for
You're
me.
Not going to talk about Johnny. You only even remember Johnny Giles playing.
Johnny Giles, a hero. What a man.
He might be a hero, but you can't say you remember him.
I've seen the videos.
That's like me saying Arkell is the greatest racer. I never saw him.
No, I didn't, but I've seen plenty of videos. But no, Roy Keane, I would argue black and blue all night long with this. Roy Keane, number one.
I'm not going to disagree, but I think you can put lots of different people into it, and any conversation that you're having should include Paul O'Donovan.
Yeah, that's fair.
Completely. That's fair. Absolutely agree on that.
And even that goes back to your point, Marita, where he probably doesn't, because he normalises a bit and the achievement doesn't get valued, we absolutely should celebrate him because he's phenomenal.
Yeah, agree. I think we might have this. We might have a proper conversation about this now. Coming up to Christmas,
would be a good one. Yeah, it is a good one. We should nail down our top five. I'd love to hear Ruby's number one.
Oh, I don't think there is a number one, because you have to have massive respect for all the different people in different sports.
How do you make a number one? But come on, give us a number one, Ruby. We all have respect for them.
Well, like, if you're saying to me who's the best footballer, I would definitely say Roy Keane. If you're saying to me who's the best rugby player, yeah. Probably Brian O'Driscoll, but I'd say Paul
Sexton.
O'Connell was hugely influential. So was Sexton. And I, funny enough, by the time he's finished, Gary Ringrose will be in that conversation too.
I'd have O'Gara in that as well, because I think the most skill comes from them number 10s.
right? I would say any conversation that I would have to include Katie Taylor.
100%.
Do you chuck in Kelly Harrington? Probably. Bolo won't. Again.
But none of them top, Roy.
I don't know.
Man United, Champions Leagues, Premier Leagues, captain, the manager on the pitch, best player.
I haven't even mentioned any GAA players.
No.
Because they're not global.
Well, Clifford, and he's one I love, but not in this, probably.
You could put him in there, though. Anyway, no, great conversation Clifford. To have.
You they're can have Irish. A debate about anybody.
Brilliant, yeah.
And as I said, I'd have Sonny in there as well.
Most definitely.
Probably in time as well, Rashida. Okay, we're going to take a break. Do you stay
How
with us?
How about Daniel
Whiffen?
How come no one has mentioned him?
In time, maybe.
Yeah. We need more Olympic goals and more world championships.
Like what we spoke about, Ruby, tonight about Djokovic, I think the longevity comes into it as well. That if you're greatness...
Longevity comes into everything.
But that's what I mean. To me, greatness is the ones that do it over 10, 12, 15 years at the top of their game. Yeah,
well, Whiffen's only early 20s.
He's only starting. Exactly. Mm-hmm.
How many world championships has Paul Donovan won now?
Seven,
was it?
Seven, I think you said. And how many
Olympic medals has he won?
He's won more.
But how big a sport
the last
is rowing?
How many people row?
Huge. Only because it's not that big in Ireland. We don't think anything about it. Yeah, we've had a whole conversation.
It is big in Ireland, though, isn't it?
It is, but it is huge globally.
Olympic champions, it has to be big.
It is, but when you look at it, like participation, probably more people play cricket than football.
But is it big globally?
Only because we don't play it that much here.
Cricket's a brilliant game. Don't get me started. Vera Cole, don't get me started on cricketers.
Okay, let's break. Colm Keyes is coming up to speak to us about Colm O'Rourke after these.
2FM.
Game on 2FM.
Now, welcome back. We're turning our attention to Gaelic games, and late last night it was announced that Colm O'Rourke has stepped down as Meath senior football manager, opting not to put himself forward for the third year of his agreed term with the county board in 2022. Colm Keyes of the Irish Independent joins us now. Colm, you might just bring us up to speed on how it got to the stage where Colm O'Rourke ended up stepping down from his role as Meath manager.
Okay, so Marie, obviously Meath's championship, Leinster championship, and following on from that, the All-Ireland group stage, they lost to Louth by 10 points, another heavy defeat to Kerry, and then lost to Monaghan, and really lost to Monaghan by a few points, but really Monaghan were well ahead. So altogether, the championship did not go very well, and there was a sense that, you know, they were at a real crossroads, and following that, the previous agreement was that Colm would take a three-year term, but after two, it would be reviewed. And obviously the review on the back of those defeats was always going to be harsh, that little bit harsher perhaps because players were surveyed. And the feedback from that pointed to change. Now, whether that was additional coaching or management change, just not clear on that, but it certainly pointed to change. And that was in discussion over the last few weeks and months. And Colm O'Rourke would have had to add to his backroom team and add significantly to it too in terms of the level of coaching, because he lost his main coach, Barry Callaghan, who was a selector with him and a coach for the last 2 years, also Stephen Bray. So there was opportunities there, and Colm O'Rourke was in the process of looking for those. But it met an impasse over the time involved. Colm wanted more time to put his backroom team together. The county board management were determined that this should all be in place by a meeting tonight. And they had a meeting last week, and they deferred a decision on in relation to the review and the recommendation for Colm for another year. He was confident of getting coaches that were currently tied up with clubs, didn't want to divulge to destabilise the club efforts. But the board, or the executive of the board, really wanted to see the cards by tonight so they could make a recommendation and move on. That's where the impasse was. You'd suspect that maybe the management were having cold feet about recommending him for another year after the season that was, on the back of a review that took feedback from the players, and maybe that's why they weren't prepared to give him more time. But he could have stayed in. Obviously it would have got messy, because the recommendation, even if it was against him, would have gone to the Meath clubs the following night, and quite likely, and I would suggest this, I think they probably would have voted to keep Colm O'Rourke in, because with him is Sean Boylan and still Trevor Giles. I think they're still part of his backroom team, and that would have been a very, very hard team, irrespective of how the team was going, to dislodge for any clubs. I don't think they would have wanted that. But Colm pulled out over the weekend, and there's a vacancy now.
That vacancy, Colm, any idea who's going to fill it?
Well, there's a number of candidates, Ruby. There's obviously Robbie Brennan, who has strong Meath connections. He's obviously from Kilmacud Crokes of origin, and he was their All-Ireland winning club manager in 2023. He's living in Dunboyne. He actually played and managed with Dunboyne at various stages over the last 20 years. And he also has connections with just outside Navan, where his father's living, and moved back out there. So he's lots of strong connections, and he has a good track record over the last 7 years of Kilmacud Crokes. They obviously won the All-Ireland, and they've completed Leinster 3 in a row as well. So that's a pretty decent resume. Obviously, he hasn't stepped up to inter-county management yet. And then Carlo Brick, who managed the All-Ireland minor winning team in 2021 and then added a Leinster title, the county's first Leinster under-21 title. 23 years. That was earlier this year. He may be reluctant to put himself in because I sense is he may want to stay on with the under-20s. And then Bernard Flynn was obviously in as a candidate when Colm O'Rourke got the job 2 years ago. He may be interested again. And there's another candidate, Lara Wall, who was working as a selector, as a coach with Davy Burke and Roscommon. And his name is starting to feature that he may be available now, and he could be candidate. And of course, Meath could look outside. They've only ever done it once before, 2012, with Seamus McEnany. But there may be a temptation to, you know, to look outside and do something different again. So that's in play there. But obviously, when the term of Colm O'Rourke comes to an end after just 2 years, and he is such a strong figure and such a big figure in the county in his playing career and even in his media after that, it is a very strong talking point.
You said there, Colm, that it could have got messy. It sounds like it was kind of messy over the last while anyway. Is that fair?
I think it was, Marie. I think obviously Colm O'Rourke's desire would not to be to go after 3 years or 2 years. I think he would have wanted to see out his third year. I know he made comments about 5 years, but that wasn't realistic. I mean, he was never going to get a green light for 5 years on the back of results, but he probably felt that he wanted to see out his term and hand it on, maybe in a better place. And he was confident, he has sounded confident about getting the coaches in time if he was given time, that this is only, you know, it's only coming to the end of August. Business is being done at inter-county level a lot earlier now because of the shape of the season, and the work that would have been done in September and October in the past seems to be done in July and August now because of the urgency to start earlier. And maybe that urgency was in the minds of the county board executive too, but I get the sense that they were reluctant to really green light him unless he had a really strong coaching package that they knew that identified, you know, seasoned and strong inter-county coaches that have worked with counties in the past. I think it probably would have taken something like that, and I think Colm was quite confident he was going to get that in time, but it didn't play out that way, and I suspect that maybe there wasn't that full solid support from where I felt it could have got messy. When I said that is, you put those three men on a management team, even if they don't have additional coaches with them, and you put it before the clubs of Meath. The clubs of Meath are not going to have that blood on their hands to get rid of Colm O'Rourke, Sean Boylan and Trevor Giles. I just could not see that happening, irrespective of what happened into the future. Just could not see it, because obviously they come from an era, and a lot of the delegates in there at club level would be people who identified with this trio and a very successful era, and there hasn't been a successful era obviously since then. They're just not, they were never going, I don't think they were ever going to do that. So if the recommendation was for them to go, I could honestly have seen it going against it, but obviously Colm could have preempted that and he got out. But I do think if it went to that, if he pushed through, it could have got messy. But obviously, if there's a little bit of discord in the dressing room or if there's something like that, it's not the best place to be going. I think he's right to go in that regard, because I don't see the team improving that fast that, you know, I just think it could have been tricky for him next year, because I, as I say, I don't see the team just improving that fast.
Well, that's probably answered my next question. Was 5 years the right prediction from Colm O'Rourke? Is that how long it was going to take to get Meath back to where the people of Meath would like them to be?
I would think 5 years and maybe more, because really Meath have, they haven't fallen off the face of the cliff. That wouldn't be true to say. But from where they were a long time ago, I mean, culturally, everything, if you take it that no senior club team in Meath has reached the Leinster Club final in 20 years now. Now, it's not everything. And obviously Louth, who are currently operating at a higher level than Meath, going better than them. They're in the same boat. But it's just a reflection of how poor really the standard is that the senior champions have not made a Leinster final in 20 years. The under 20 team that Carl O'Brick took charge of earlier this year and won the Leinster title, that was the first time in 23 years that Meath had won a Leinster title. They've only been in a handful of finals, even one or two finals, something like that. So really the basis of a strong senior team on those two metrics aren't there. Now, you can always, with good coaching, and bring it so far, but I'm not even sure that leap is there. And I do think there's been a lot of 5 years, Ruby, with me. There's been 5 years, 10 years ago, people thought it would take 5 years, 5 years again. You can lose your footing culturally in a county towards, and probably Kildare are in the same boat too, that they're slipping away, and maybe Brian Flanagan turns the tide in the next few years as well. But there would be that sense that, you know, culturally you're slipping away, your teams aren't competitive enough, and you're in an ever-decreasing circle. Now, I do think there would be pickup. Of course there will be pickup, and the new management will always have a pickup effect as well. But long-term sustainability for either, I think it's going to take, I think 5 years would be accurate before you're on a much firmer footing.
Yeah, it sounds like it. Thank you so much, as always, Colm Keyes, for joining us. We're going to take a very quick break, and then we will be talking football with Alan Cawley and Stephen Kelly.
Game on 2FM.
Yeah, welcome back. We're turning our attention to football. Stephen Kelly is with us on the line, Alan Cawley in studio. Stephen, I want to start with the really sad news about former England football manager Sven Goran Eriksson passing away at the age of 76. I know he was so vocal about his illness, and this hasn't come as a shock to anybody, but it's still such sad news. Did you ever come across him?
No, actually, obviously when he was in charge of England, I don't think we played against him or Ireland, but for my old players I've played with that would have worked on them, he always came across as such a nice guy, and I played with a few Swedish lads as well, Seb Larsson and Eric Edmund at Tottenham, and they knew him quite well, I think, and they always got him very well and spoke very highly of him. So yeah, it's obviously extremely sad news. Like I said, you kind of it was coming, he's been ill for a while, so it wasn't a shock to anybody, but I think in football circles he's just renowned for being such a lovely person, such a kind-hearted man, and someone that's always been always been very nice to work on there for a lot of players I know. So but yeah, never had the privilege to work on them myself, but yeah, very very sad day.
Yeah, lots of nice things been said, which isn't too common in football, Al, but like universally people seem to really like him.
Yeah, I listened to a lot of the tributes earlier, and Steve McLaren gave a lovely tribute when obviously he worked with him as the assistant with England, and just spoke about the character that he was, the charisma that he had, and very kind and very nice. He said he never seen him lose the head, which is strange in football for a manager.
Absolutely, yeah.
He said he actually never seen him lose the head, and he used to have this thing every evening. He said the staff would sit around when they were on camp or away at on international duty, and they'd discuss the football and the team and all the stuff they obviously have to plan and go through. And he said once 9 o'clock hit, he'd say to Tord Grip, who was assistant, who went everywhere with him, he'd say, okay Tord, that's the end of the football, get the wine for the lads. And he used to have two bottles of white and two bottles of red, and they'd just switch off from the football and have a couple of glasses of wine. And he said they did that everywhere they went. He said it was lovely.
Yeah, he seemed to have his priorities right on the way, Alan, didn't he? a few managers could have done with a few bottles of wine, I think, after the weekend. There was some results there. Maybe Eric Ten Hag, that was a rough going, Stephen, wasn't it? A sucker punch right at the end to lose to Brighton after, look, I guess the start within the first week and kind of getting control back of the game. You thought maybe they were going to do something, but it feels a bit like same old for Manchester United.
Yeah, it does. But Brian, it's Brian seem every year, like I said, they seem to change managers and they change players. You're going to, at some point they're going to drop off. They're not going to produce, and then again they're going to get with someone else, someone new, someone unknown to some extent, and they can still get big results. You kind of, and then for United it's the same old. But yeah, to sucker punch the last few minutes of the game like they did. But I'm more impressed by Brighton than I am disappointed with United, to be honest. I just, as a blueprint, you're looking thinking, how can they continually lose what's deemed as the next best manager, Potter? Then De Zerbi comes in and he's better, and the new one comes in, he's even better. And you're kind of thinking, this, how can they keep returning and turning over players like they do and continue on in that vein? And it's, yeah, last year I think they dropped off slightly, but I think it's so impressive the way they go about their business, and yeah, another big win for them.
Alan, Brighton is a club that's just run incredibly well, is it not?
Yeah, 100% Ruby, yeah. And that's, I suppose, that's the starting point for everything that happens on the pitch. The club is on such solid ground, obviously behind the scenes as well. Dan Ashworth, who's gone in at United, ironically enough, would have been the man to maybe start that off. And so he has all the structures in place, the culture built up, and they've just carried on despite the fact that he moved on to Newcastle and now he's gone in at United. And it'll be interesting to see, can he replicate something similar at United? But certainly Brighton, and Stephen's right, everybody, the story is always United and the lose, but Brighton's had an unbelievable start, and considering the manager's only 31 years of age, it's incredible really. When you, I think there's five or six players older than
absolutely, sure, Milner anyways, yeah. Up there,
so it's, it is Ruby, it's phenomenal achievement what they do. Tony Bloom, obviously, who you probably know through the horses as well, it's an incredible club, and good luck to them.
Stephen, what about Evan Ferguson? I know there was a story over the weekend that he was linked with perhaps moving away from Brighton, but do you think that he's going to be able to get back into that team again, especially they've started so well?
Yeah, I would think he'd get back in at some point. He's going to get games home. I don't think Danny Welbeck's the player that's going to play 38 games a season. I just can't see it. He's never done it really in his career before, and I think Ferguson's got a lot to offer. I think there was obviously question marks whether he was going to stay there, or you know, when he was flying, whether he should go on to, or was this the best place for his development. But part of his development is being able to play games, and for Evan it's about getting into that side, so it's important for him to stick out. But I think his attitude, his work rate, is the way he goes about his business, that will stand in the stead to get him back in a position to play in this team. And like I said, the injuries will kick in. I'm not wishing injuries on anybody, but you just know at some point is Welbeck will drop off, or it'll be an opportunity for Ferguson to get back into the side. And it's about taking him with two hands and being as well prepared as you possibly can. I think Evan is a type of player that will have that mindset to be ready for it.
Alan, you told me last week Arsenal would win the league. Are you still as confident after they managed to get 3 points off Aston Villa?
I'm even more confident, Ruby, because looking at the performance, they were absolutely fabulous, and they haven't conceded a goal yet. Defensively, they're so sound. The keeper had to be called into action, and it was an unbelievable save, Raya, from Watkins. Watkins should have scored, but it was a brilliant save.
He should have scored twice.
Yeah. He missed a sitter in the first half as well, you're right, and then the one in the second half that the keeper saved. And he's been a little bit off it, and I'm just wondering, the players that have obviously gone late into the Euros and then only getting 2 and 3 weeks off and coming back, and I know he didn't play every minute, but there just seems to be a knock-on effect with some of the players, and I certainly think it's impacted him because he hasn't had the start the season that he had last year. But certainly from Arsenal's point of view, Ruby, yeah, they're a powerhouse of a team as well. You look how strong they are physically, so well organised, so disciplined. Then you bring Trossard off the bench, he makes the difference. Saka, obviously the star that he is. So they'll definitely... Calafiori, I thought, played really well when he came on as well, and he'll be a huge addition. It's just about maintaining a lot of those lads and keeping them fit. But I certainly think they've had a brilliant start. And if you remember back last year, Villa were their bogey team as well. They struggled against Villa.
They lost twice, yeah.
And Villa was the team that beat them towards the end of the season, if you like, that people are suggesting maybe cost them. So that to get one over on Villa, Unai Emery, a brilliant manager as well, they've had a brilliant start, Arsenal.
Stephen, are they going to be able to match up to Man City though? We saw them concede early in that game, Sami Smodic, but it was like they were burnt almost, and they came back then and scored 3 goals in quick succession and then seemed to just cruise through the rest of the game.
Yeah, Ipswich poked a bear, didn't they, early on?
Yeah.
Just woke them up and was like, okay, see, but that's what City do. See, you're capable of doing that. It's weird. Again, it pains me, it's Arsenal, but I do think this could be the year Arsenal do it. I just feel City, I think, yeah, they're firing now. De Bruyne looks brilliant. Haaland is firing, but I don't know. I feel like there's some players that are not at the peak of their powers that they were before, and I think Arsenal have just been growing in confidence and growing in confidence. City were emphatic though. The goals they scored, the way they put the ball away, they look dangerous in attack. They look like their energy about them in the forward areas, and I think there's a few key players missing as well, so it's so hard to tell. But I think if Arsenal have learned anything from the last two seasons, it's how to do it. But you need to be almost perfect. You need to be almost perfect to win the league with City, with Pep, and the fact that City still have Pep at the helm means that's something that it's extremely hard to get over the course of a season, having him at the helm. So, you know, but I think Arsenal, this is the best chance they're ever going to have to do, I think, based on what they've done in the last couple of seasons.
Well, did the threat of a fire sale in Chelsea this week kick them into gear?
They were very good, Ruby, to be fair. And this is the thing, and I mentioned this last week, if Maresca is allowed to actually just deal with the players that he has at his disposal, a very good squad. You'd expect it, a good squad with the money that they've spent, but there is a lot of talented players there, a very good squad of players. And if he's allowed to concentrate on that and just that alone and get the team into shape and obviously put his imprint on it, I think they can have a good season. And yesterday obviously proved that, because they were brilliant. Wolves, as we know, had a brilliant season last year. Difficult place to go. I know they got beat last weekend as well, but to score 6 goals in any Premier League match is an achievement, mm-hmm. and to do it away from home. So I think Maresca could actually do well with Chelsea if they don't interfere and annoy him, and the other problems in terms of the players that obviously he doesn't want, which I think he's made quite clear as well that he doesn't want them. And that's fine, that's what you need. You don't need uncertainty, you need clarity. And if he's told the ones like Chilwell and Sterling, which it appears that he has, look, you won't be playing, we don't want you, it's up to the club now to try and offload them and get rid of them this week with the transfer window closing. And if he can just concentrate on the football side of things, I think Chelsea could go okay.
I did see somebody say, Al, that he's only a couple of games into his season, and you can see his identity when you compare it to Manchester United and Ten Hag, and he hasn't been able to do that.
And that's the criticism of Ten Hag. Like, you, the line you used earlier on was same old, like, and that's been the problem with him. And I'm looking at United at the weekend again, and the problems and the issues, and you're thinking, here's a manager now, is he 2 years, 3 years into the role, and this lad is 2 weeks, Maresca, and they can all see what they're doing. So that's been a major problem. I think if United lose on Sunday to Liverpool, and you haven't asked us about Liverpool yet yesterday, but Liverpool were brilliant and they look so sharp, I think Ten Hag is going to face serious, serious questions, because they won't let it linger the way they did last season. And we all know the FA Cup saved his job. So I think he needs to improve drastically in the next 2 or 3 games to save his job nearly already.
Stephen, if you're Diego Diaz, with all the pace he has, that goal he scored at the weekend, are you looking ahead to next weekend thinking, I can't wait to run at Harry Maguire?
Oh my God. But look at the pace Liverpool have. Attack, you bring on Gakpo, you have Salah, you know, even Jota running forward. They counter-attack, they're blistering. They were like this last season, at moments last season, when they counter-attack teams. And what I love about Liverpool is that they don't overcomplicate. They'll put the ball from front to back really quickly with great accuracy. They have Trent and players that can pick a long pass, and it's not playing long football. It's just seeing and identifying that there's a weakness here. We can go and we can cut a team open in one pass instead of ticky-tacky 15 phases of play up the pitch, and then they allow the team to get back. Liverpool just go bang, cut like a knife through you, and then finish you off. And they've got that about them, and yeah, they'll be looking at next week in the form they've started, the confidence they'll have at the moment. They'll think, yeah, we can really, really get destroyed this United side.
Stephen, Everton conceded 4 goals this week, 3 last week. Obviously, you'd be happy to see Spurs beat them, but what is going to turn around where they're at? And what must Jacob Boyne be thinking? Am I going to get into this team? Do I want to get into this team?
Yeah, it's like, you kind of think to yourself, they can't just continually keep doing what they've been doing and be cannon fodder for the season and then somehow stay up. Like, it can't keep happening. That there has to be some sort of change with Everton. Like, the fan base, at times they're brilliant, they're like the 12th man, they get them over the line, but then it's back into the same habits of being poor. But the lack of players they can get in, you know, financial difficulties they're going to have with the stadium and the points they were taking off them last season, they don't want to go down those lines again because they scraped through. And you know, Sean Dyche, he's a firefighter, he's a manager that can put out issues and keep a team up. But can you continually do that with the same team, with the same players, with the same board and the same fans that are expecting something more when you're not being given the tools or the facilities? So I think Everton, yeah, it just seems like a shambolic place at the moment. But yeah, delighted for Tottenham to score 4 and look comfortable in that game, which was really nice.
Okay, Stephen, thank you so much as always. Al, you may as well stay with us for the next 10 minutes. We're going to take a very quick break, but we will be chatting college football and NFL after these.
Game on 2FM.
Now, welcome back. So in the next 24 hours or so, Down's Charlie Smith and Derry's Jude McTanamy will receive more clarity on their NFL futures as the new roster cut deadline races into view. And to talk us through what could happen for the two lads, Shane Brennan from the Irish NFL Show is with us. So Shane, is it likely that they are going to make the roster?
How you doing, guys? If we're being fully honest, it's probably a little bit unlikely that they are going to make the full-time roster. Basically, what's happening is over the next 2 days, one of 3 things could happen. One, the team could decide that when the 53-man roster comes out that they are the lone kicker on their teams. Charlie Smith at the Saints and Jude McAtamney at the Giants. Two, they could decide just to be cut and another team could pick them up potentially. Mm-hmm. Or three, they could move them on to a practice squad.
Okay, so they have options anyway at the moment. So it's not going to be the end of the journey.
No, certainly not. And I particularly with Charlie Smith, I think the main thing is that he's come into this as part of this NFL pathway group where there is a pathway for him to stay on the practice squad and hone his skills for another 12 months. The problem is at the moment with the two guys, they haven't done anything wrong. They've got to put all everything they've been asked to do. They've done well. The problem is that the two guys they're up against are veterans who have been given multi-million dollar contracts already. But with another 12 months of development, by the time it comes around to this time next year, with a few more practice games, with a few more kicks under their belt, they can really, develop a profile and maybe get picked up by another team. What's also important as well is after the deadline tomorrow, which is at 9 o'clock our time on Wednesday, there's a 24-hour period where any team could decide to pick up on either Charlie or Jude if they so wanted. So there is a possibility that if one of these teams likes something they saw in either of those two guys, they could make a kind of surprise move to one of the other teams. But what's probably most likely to happen, particularly with Charlie, is that he's going to stay on the practice squad in New Orleans, take another year to improve his skills, keep kicking balls, keep showing the world what he can do, and maybe a promotion into the NFL squad, either at some point this year if there's an injury or something like that, or next year after all that extra time kicking the ball, improving his skills. You have to remember with Charlie in particular, it's a game that he never played up until this time last year. He's come an incredibly long way to get to where he's been at this point. So hope is lost. But it is probably unlikely that by the time the 53-man rosters are announced tomorrow that these guys will be on them. But who knows? I mean, we probably thought that last year with Daniel Whelan on the Packers. He was also up against a veteran in Green Bay. But the Packers decided to go with youth and to go with Daniel Whelan, and we had an Irishman on the NFL squad. So that could still happen tomorrow, and I'm sure there is still plenty of hope.
What about the likelihood for former Welsh rugby star Louis Rees-Zammit? Will he get in with the Kansas City Chiefs, or will they give him more time?
I think similar to Charlie, he'd probably be given more time to hone his skills in the practice squad. What's difficult for Rees-Zammit is the fact that he's not a kicker. He's not somebody who's focused on one thing. He's throughout the three practice games he's been put into, he's been trying to throw into a lot of different roles. Sometimes he's running with the ball. Sometimes he's been asked to catch passes. Sometimes he's been returning kicks and punts. So I think it's quite clear that they're happy that he is an athlete and happy that he has skills, but they're not really quite sure what to do with him just yet. And it's a much more difficult thing to do when you're playing in that kind of outfield role against so many of these NFL stars who, between high school, college, and the NFL, have probably been playing the game for over 10 years. It's a very, very difficult thing to get used to. So I think similar to Charlie, because of that NFL pathway, because there is an extra slot for international players on that practice squad, the Lewis will be given a bit of time to hone his skills over the next few months. So I think it will, as much as he has been given plenty of game time over the last 3 weeks in the three preseason games to, I guess, prove to Kansas City that he's good enough to stick around, I think it's probably expected that he will be on the practice squad as well.
Over the weekend, we had the college football game here in Dublin, and it seemed anyway like it was a great success, Shane.
Fantastic success. And the best thing about it was not only did the team with the Irishman win, it was a huge upset as well. Georgia Tech came into this as real underdogs against the Florida State team, who are heavy favourites. They're the ranked the 10th best team in the country. Not a lot of people were expecting Georgia Tech to win this. They were expecting a close game, all right. But the nature of the game as well, and the fact that it came down to a field goal, and David Shanahan, the punter for Georgia Tech, who was from Kerry, he was a part of that specialist group. He had to hold the ball and make sure it was held in place for that final kick that went over the bar. So his hands were very important in making sure that Georgia Tech sealed a victory. And look, it's a sold-out stadium. The buzz around Dublin all week was fantastic. And just the general occasion around the college football is fantastic. I mean, anybody who enjoys watching the bands and the cheerleaders will tell you that.
Absolutely. Shane Brennan from the Irish NFL Show, thank you so much for joining us and bringing us up to speed on that. Ruby, myself and Alan are heading over to Tala Stadium for Shamrock Rovers against Shelburne in the Women's FAI Cup quarterfinal. Can we tempt you up from Kildare?
No,
there's curry chips
actually
on offer.
I'm going to look up and learn
today
all about Rashida Adeleke, because myself and Shane Dawson will be talking to her tomorrow night, and we will have football with Conan Byrne and Fergal Brennan as well. Marie,
someday.
Ruby, I've another one for you, Ruby.
Ken Doherty. And Sean Kelly.
Well, there's two. Definitely.
Yeah, we can keep going. We'd have to have a point and discuss this properly.
We'll have a
proper row.
A proper row.
We can actually say what we really think.
Okay, lads. Thank you so much. Enjoy tomorrow. Rashida, that's really exciting to have her on fresh from the Olympics and the Diamond League. I know you're watching it, so loads to talk about there. So that is it from us. The new music show with Dermot O'Brien standing in is up next.